Hi, I'm Jen Suliafu, and I'm delighted to be on this journey with you. Life is an exciting game with many twists and turns. It gets really good when we begin to learn how it works and how to win. I believe that no matter where someone's life is at, we have the power to make radical shifts to create a life that truly honors us. I live for awakenings, so let's get to it, darlings. Okay, hey everyone, welcome to today's show. I am really looking forward to this conversation we're having today. Over the years, my eyes have been really open to several things in our world, and my opinion has changed drastically. One of the most recent things I have started paying attention to is our educational system. It popped up on my radar in 2020 when they canceled school. And at that point, I really began asking questions that I can't believe I hadn't asked before as a parent, such as, who is teaching my child? Or what are they learning? Is the educational system really teaching my children the valuable info that they need to fly the nest when it's time to go? Today, I'm talking with Connor Boyack. He's the president of Libertas Institute, a free market think tank responsible for dozens of policy reforms across a wide range area, such as data privacy, innovation, drug policy, education, and more. He's a public speaker and author of 28 books, which have sold over 2 million copies. So welcome, Connor. Hello and welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. I'm so excited to talk to you today because I ordered your books and I've been reading them and going over them with my children. I'm learning a lot as an adult. Like, it's not
kids. That's not uncommon. You know, we never intended it that way when we were doing the Tuttle Twins books. When we started, we just thought, you know, we'll teach these kids. And by accident, almost, we stumbled into this trend where the parents were like, I was never taught that in school. And so it's something we've leaned into to really say, hey, parents, here's a very kind of, you know, non-intimidating way of learning some of these concepts that maybe you missed out on. And then together with your kids, you can learn and talk about it. And parents have really loved that.
I love it. Awesome. So I can tell you're really passionate about what you do. And I would love for you to give us an idea of what even brought you into this, what led you down this path to do this work.
There's a lot of ways to answer that because obviously a lot of variables go into this. But I'll share with you one story that comes to mind. I was not a political activist. I was not involved. I was actually a web developer. I built websites for a living and I'd follow the news. But then I saw something happen with a group called the FLDS. This is like an offshoot of the Mormon church and they still practice polygamy and a lot of people have heard about Warren Jeffs and he's kind of a skeezy bad dude. Well, in when was this? 2007. I'm watching the news and I learned about this raid on this kind of community where these people lived. And it was a false tip. This lady basically made a crank call and sent in all these SWAT teams and helicopters and they took over 400 kids. They put them in foster care, which in Texas at the time and perhaps still was a very dangerous thing. And look, I have no kind of affiliation with these people. I don't share their lifestyle or whatever, but I saw that happening and I saw so many people who were like, yeah, they deserve it. They're weird. They're, you know, whatever. And that deeply troubled me. There was no due process. You know, the moms weren't accused of anything. They were losing their children for who knows how long. It was just very, very troubling. And something in me just kind of like, I don't know, there was a spark, a fire. I started a petition. I got a bunch of media. I was publicly speaking out against this to say like, I have nothing to do with any of that, but that's wrong. And, you know, we need to, you know, get these kids back to their homes and not rip them away from their mothers and all this stuff. And that was like me dipping my toe, I guess, in this world of like political activism and trying to fight for the little guy. The big guys, the people with money, the people with power, like they can take care of themselves clearly. But what I tapped into was this problem that there's so many people that experience problems with the government and they don't have connections. They don't have resources. They don't even have knowledge. They don't know how to fight back. And so they just suffer and they take it. And so things like that throughout my life really kind of led me to this path of starting an organization, Libertas Institute, where we're now a resource to change laws for the better, to try and have justice, to try and have a freer market, often for the little guy, to make sure that these people who have nowhere else to turn can turn to us and say, you know, hey, I'm being persecuted, or this law is going to threaten my business or whatever. Can you help? And so we've tried to be a resource where people who can't help themselves can turn to us. And if we can't help, we can at least point them in the right direction, help them on their journey. And I just feel this like deep in my bones desire to help the little guy, and this sense of, I don't know, frustration with how people with money and power basically have no problems. They can make all their problems go away. So there's this inequity of access to power, and the little guy can't really do that. They don't know how. And so we try and be an organization in the middle to find a better equilibrium so that those people can get access to power, elected officials and so forth, and get their problems solved as well, so that we can hold the government accountable. So that's, I got a lot of stuff like that in my background that kind of shapes who I am and how I feel this desire to just fight injustice. I have very thick skin, if you could like zoom in and see, right? So we get, you know, beat up all the time. We pick some big fights and everything. I get critics and whatnot. I've kind of been built for this work in that sense. Like, I don't care about the critics and, you know, what they say about us. You do need thick skin to be in this business. But for me, it's just wanting to have more justice for more people, and I've been blessed with a set of talents and knowledge that allow me to do something about it. So I feel compelled to do it.
You are my kind of person, for real. I love it. And I look at your social media. I read your emails. You've popped up on my radar just recently because I homeschool now with my kids. Mm-hmm. Now that everything happened with 2020, I didn't send them back. And I just started looking at things on a deeper level. But I resonate with your messages so much. And to me, you are what I call a warrior for sure. When you see something that doesn't even have to do with you, and you're like, hey, those people need help. I adore that characteristic in humans, especially since everything has happened with 2020. But even before that, that's really awesome. So what ended up happening? Because I vaguely remember this story now that you're saying this, but it's kind of one of those things, because I live in Utah as well. Mm. I live up here in the Salt Lake Valley. And so that story was around, but so you said 2007.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening with that?
So they arrested that Warren Jeffs guy. And I mean, he went on the underground, he went into hiding. It took him a while to kind of find him and arrest him. The children were eventually returned, I think in all but like one or two cases. And then, you know, you may think, oh, case closed, but there's trauma involved when you've basically been legally kidnapped by the government and forced to live with strangers who, again, in these foster homes, there's often, you know, abuse and drugs and all kinds of stuff. And but the kids were eventually returned, and, you know, the FLDS community still is there. They're still doing their thing. They've had other challenges and problems, but there's some resolution there. Warren Jeffs is now in jail. But, you know, the interesting thing to me was the government's never really held accountable. I mean, you look at like Ruby Ridge or Waco or some of these other incidents where you get the government coming against these like minority groups and weird religious sects and stuff like that. And the government just kills people and abuses people and harms people, and no one's ever held accountable. And so that's the type of stuff that boils my blood, where people in power can get away with abuse and problems and not be held liable. And I just think that's wrong. So there have been plenty of other incidents over the years, of course, that kind of motivate our work and that we're involved in. But that was in part my genesis story of, and I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I was writing letters to congressmen. You know, I got this letter back from Orrin Hatch, who years later I would work on a campaign to get him unelected because I was so displeased by him. But I got this reply back, I remember, from Orrin Hatch, where he's like, oh, I'm deeply concerned and I'll be following this. Thank you. I mean, it's a form letter written by an intern. You know, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm banging down people's doors saying someone's got to do something. And again, I didn't have knowledge of like how to, you know, specifically deal with situations. I didn't have connections. I didn't have relationships. But it was me dipping my toe in the water to say like, hey, like I had a blog at the time that was very well read, and all these people in the comments were just like, thank you. You know, it's so great to see someone do something about it. And they were spreading the word to their friends, come sign the petition, come whatever. And people felt grateful and empowered that someone else was standing up and doing something. And so that to me was like, oh, I can be that person. Like, I enjoyed it. I seem to do okay at it. And a lot of people won't stand up, but I feel like I'm a type of person that can. And I had stops and starts over the years, but that was like my dipping the toe in the water to say, like, maybe I ought to be more involved in this type of thing. And it took me 4 or 5 years to finally figure out that that meant, you know, setting up an organization like this and formalizing it a bit more. It's deeply motivating when you wake up every day trying to solve problems for people and trying to help people. It's a good reason for me to get out of bed.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting to me is you look like a pretty young guy, right? I'm sure you're not that old. And
turning 40 this year.
You're turning 40. Okay. So you're young. You're young. I'm 45. So I beat you. I know you do have children. Did you have children in 2007?
No, I was newly married when all of this went down. And so, you know, my poor newlywed wife is probably like, what have I gotten myself into? I married a web developer and now he's a political activist. I mean, I was on TV. That was my first TV interview. It was over that petition that I did. And Babyface Connor is sitting there like spouting his opinions on KSL. So yeah, no kids at the time.
That means even more to me that you didn't even have children, but you were probably, yeah, you were thinking about the children, you were thinking about the moms, the parents. I think that that's really mature. That says a lot about you and where you were at that point. And you, I laugh about when you say that about your wife. You're like, she's like, what is going on? I didn't sign up for this. I thought we were going to have a pretty mellow life for a minute.
It's been anything but mellow. She's been very supportive and patient, but she kind of shares my views, thankfully. And so even for like my friends, I have a lot of people who live vicariously through me, right? Like they don't want to be involved in politics. They don't want to do all these things, but like they're glad that someone else is. And they love when I come share stories with them of all of our battles and everything. And so I think my wife's a little that way too, where it's like, okay, you do enough for the both of us. You know, I'm just here to kind of support and help in whatever way I can.
I love that. She has to be a match for your warrior spirit. So I'm sure she's a warrior as well.
She is.
That's awesome. But I think that a lot of people have been able to remain on the sidelines and kind of like, hey, you do that. That's good for you. But I think we're at a turning point right now where most people are having to like stand up and say, hey, this is where I'm at in life. And this is what I believe in, because we're really at a crossroads on planet Earth. And so I think a lot of people that have been able to just kind of sit back and let other people be in the limelight, they're kind of having to say what they think more nowadays.
I'll give you a data point that I think substantiates what you're saying in a little bit of a different way. So we've got these TeleTwins books and we've been doing this for 7 years. And obviously we started with, you know, just one book and then we had a second. And so when you start anything, you start slow before like the curve, you know, starts kind of going up. In our first 5 years, 2014 through 2019, we sold a total of about 750,000 books across those years, which as a self-publishing startup, you know, group was great. We were super excited and the trend, the curve was starting to go up as the word is getting out and so forth. 750,000 over 5 years. Last year alone in 2020, we sold 1.3 million books, which is almost double the entire, you know, past years combined. And so as we would do polling or surveys, trying to like learn from a lot of these families, why, you know, are you getting these books? How are you using them? What prompted you? And or even just organic like emails and outreach we were getting from these families, it boils down to kind of what you're saying. So many of these families were like shaken awake by all the events of 2020 and felt like they needed to do something. And for a lot of parents, the answer of what to do is not get involved. It's not go to the school board meeting. It's not go to the city council meeting. They don't want to. They're too intimidated. But teaching their kids and learning themselves, as we talked about at the beginning, that's something that a lot of these families can do. It's like, hey, guys, you've neglected this for too long. You've assumed that the schools are going to teach your kids about property rights and free markets and entrepreneurship and all these things. And you've been wrong to assume that. If anything, the schools are often teaching opposite ideas. And so many of these parents have felt like, okay, well, I can't do everything. I can't, you know, start an organization and do this full time. I get it. We all have our own places and roles. But every parent can sit down with their kids and make sure that they're passing on these ideas, that they're having dinner conversations with their kids, that they're talking as a family about current events in the world through this lens of the ideas of a free society. And so that was a very empowering thing for a lot of these families to say, like, look, yes, I'm involved over here. Maybe I'm going to some of these public meetings, whatever. But I can also get these books. I can read them with my family. I can make sure that, you know, within my own home that we're doing what we can to support our kids and basically not being woke and crazy in the years ahead. So the response was just overwhelming, and it's just continued as well.
Being woke and crazy. I love that you just said that, because we had some friends here this last weekend and that word came up and they said that word. And I was like, do you guys know what that means now? And they're like, yeah, it means you're awake, you're aware. And I said, no, that's not what it means anymore. The definition of that has been flipped. So anyways, That's a whole nother conversation for sure. But I feel like we've outsourced our lives. So when you said, you know, parents having this conversation and making sure that you're teaching your children what they need to learn, I've been guilty of it as well. And we've outsourced our lives in many, many ways. Even like with the healthcare system, we've outsourced like giving our baby over to the doctor and saying, whatever you want to do to it, whatever you want to put in it, like, I'm not going to think about it. I'm not going to look at it. I came from a pharmaceutical background. That's what I actually did for a while. I also went into the media, and being in both of those industries, you couldn't pay me enough to go back to either of them because of what I know now, but it helped open my eyes to both of those industries of what's going on behind them. You mentioned, you know, that the government's not accountable for the things that they do. Same thing with the media for sure. And for sure, same thing with the pharmaceutical companies as well. All the damage that is done. And then it's like, at the end of the day, no one is ever accountable. That's why, you know, for me, this most recent one is the school system. I never in a million years would have thought that I would homeschool. Like, it just wasn't even on my radar. So I would love to go there for a minute as far as, so you have children, yes?
Yeah.
And do you homeschool them? I want you to talk about, did they ever go to the public school? What do you feel is the most important thing for people to know about our school system?
Sure. So we've always homeschooled our children. They're 12 and 10. And I myself am a product of public school, for which my mother continues to apologize. She's like, in the 80s in California, homeschooling was not a thing. And so she never, like, you know, thought to do it. But we homeschool. And that newlywed wife I mentioned back in 2007, I gave her a book that I had recently read by John Taylor Gatto called Dumbing Us Down, The Hidden Curriculum of Compulsory Education, which I highly recommend. John himself was an award-winning public school teacher for like 30 years in New York. And so he was trying to work within the system. And at the end, he quit in the very year that he was awarded New York State Teacher of the Year. He quit by writing an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal titled, I Quit, I Think, in which he goes on to explain that despite trying to work from within, he was ultimately participating in harming more than helping children. And he lays out the case for, you know, how the system harms kids. That's not to say that there aren't well-intentioned teachers and school. I mean, there absolutely are. It's not like this nefarious thing full of evil people. And yet the design of the system itself is such that it dumbs children down. I think we see that today. You look at like eighth grade tests from a century ago. Of like what kids were expected to know and learn and be able to articulate, right? Versus like the videos you can find on YouTube of high school seniors being asked very basic questions and they simply don't know. Our schools, the byproduct, they're pumping out ignorant social justice warriors. I mean, it's now virtue signaling and identity politics, and you don't need to know all this information. So I'm against the system. I actually oppose government schools. I think they're one of our biggest problems for those of us who believe in freedom. This system is pumping out an entire generation of people who are fighting against the very ideals that this country was founded upon. Whether homeschooling, private schooling, you know, some mix of the two, there's all kinds of alternatives. I just feel like, as you said earlier, parents have largely delegated so much of this to others. Like, okay, maybe, you know, people might say, when I grew up, I turned out just fine. So therefore, you know, my kids will be okay. It's a different world today. Things probably weren't fine when you were a kid. You just have this bias of remembering things a certain way. And even if things were fine, who knows how much better you could have been had you been educated in a different way. You're just have the bias of like seeing your life for what it is and what it's been, but you don't know. Like for me, I wish I skipped college. Looking back, I never knew that was an option. I never thought about it. you know, going into debt, wasting time, just getting into the job market for my particular role, avoiding any of the, you know, silliness and whatever, especially today where they're just like massively, you know, woke indoctrination factories. Just the other day, that professor at a university in Portland quit, where he's like, it's not about ideas anymore. It's all about identity and victimhood. For me, I wish I would have skipped college. And so I don't know where I would be in my life or how much further or whatever had I been exposed to some of those opportunities. So I'm not against education. It's funny, when you criticize government schools, the reaction from a lot of people is like, why do you hate education? It's like, so if I hate that the government were in charge of like growing all food and food distribution, you would say that I don't want people to eat, right? Like, that's a ridiculous thing to say. Just because you don't want the government to be a monopoly in providing that doesn't mean that you're against the thing itself. It's just that you feel that there are more efficient and effective ways of delivering that product or that service. Same thing with education. I'm a massive fan of education. My wife helps run our homeschool co-op. I speak at schools and homeschool groups all the time. Through Tuttle Twins, obviously, we're all about education. I think education is amazing and essential and important. I just feel like the system and the setup of the government school system actually inhibits kids to follow their own curiosity and learn things they want. I wrote a book called Passion Driven Education about this exact issue, how to help kids learn about things that interest them and how to center an entire curriculum around the interests of the children, because that's how we authentically learn. We all learn and retain knowledge about things that interest us and that help us further our lives. And yet we subject kids to this horribly awkward and artificial experiment where we say all children must learn all the same things at the same age in the same way, like it's a conveyor belt in a factory with your just industrial process, and we're stamping all these kids to be the same way. I'm a religious person. I think that God has prepared my kids for things that I have no clue what they are. Some school bureaucrat certainly has no clue what they are. My mission is to help my children discover what their interests and mission in life and path in life is. And that means a very customized approach. I can't delegate it, as you point out earlier, to someone else. I would be, I think, derelict in my duty as a parent if I just said, hey, go follow this conveyor belt and you'll be fine. I want a very custom approach for my children who I brought into this world to say, what are your interests? What do you want to learn about? How can we help you grow into an amazing person? And obviously around that, you want them to learn reading and writing and arithmetic and like all the basic things. And yet, as I talk about in Passion Driven Education, even if your kid's interested in My Little Pony or Pokemon or horses or, you know, dinosaurs or whatever, there are all kinds of creative and fun ways where you can help your child gain skills in, you know, reading and writing and arithmetic and all those subjects, if you then kind of focus them around that child's interest. Because then for the child, they're like, oh, this is helping me. You know, I remember when my son was interested in Angry Birds, the little, you know, game that's popular. And I used one of the Angry Birds games. It's Angry Birds Space, and it's all like asteroids and planets. And so there's gravity, right? And stuff like that. And I was able to teach my kid the basics of physics. And he was like 7 years old. And he loved it because it wasn't like, son, let's now teach you about momentum, right? And gravity and force and all that. Like, no, that would be abstract and weird. And he doesn't care. He wants to learn about Angry Birds. And so when I help him understand why the birds fall and why there's this gravity field and what happens if you enter it and how that works on our planet, all of that was helping him learn things that he wanted to learn. He was interested in it. He gobbled up every tidbit of information, even if it was science or math or English that I was weaving into what his interests were. That is how we as adults learn. We follow our interests. We solve the problems that we have. I am a proponent of not treating kids artificially and subjecting themselves to this weird experiment, only then later in life to say, oh, okay, now you're an adult. Go learn whatever you want in whatever way you want. I feel like we ought to treat our children the way that we like to be treated, the way that humans like to be treated. And again, that does require a more customized approach. You can do it even through schools. There, you can supplement. It's not like you have to homeschool. But this one-size-fits-all conveyor belt process, I think, does, as John Taylor Gatto learned and later said, does a lot of harm to kids. And I feel very sad about that because I think kids have so much amazing potential. And I don't want to deprive them of rising to the occasion rather than dumbing them down to some expectation that some curriculum bureaucrat 3,000 miles away came up with.
Yeah. I love that. I bet your children are little geniuses. Guarantee it. That's the thing though, is children are geniuses. They're so smart. They're so light. They're so bright. And I see that not just our school system, also the many, many avenues here, the food, the medication, all of it, it does dim, and dumbs all of us down. And then you get to a point where you're like, okay, you're graduated. It's time to fly the nest. Now, what do you want to do with your life? They've just been spit out of a system that taught them not to think for themselves, not to tap into their creativity, not to know what their talents are or their passions. And now we're like, hey, what are you going to do? Well, how come you don't have any ideas? How come you don't know what your gifts are or your talents or all of those things that they know as a kid, right?
Yeah.
So right. I think that when you said that you can do it with the school system, but you definitely have to supplement it, I agree with that for sure. I also think that it kind of fights against you in a sense, the more I look at the school system, because when the kids go into the school system, they're taught to face this way, stand in line, raise your hand if you need to go to the bathroom, learn this way, right between the lines, like do all of these things a certain way. Like you said, kind of train them to be like these little soldiers that are stamped out of the system. They don't really think for themselves. And trying to undo that when they're there for like 35 hours a week, that's a long time. And so I definitely am not trying to shame any parents, because for me, I have two older kids and they went all the way through the school system. And my daughter also is in college. She's just graduating with her bachelor's degree. And I 100% agree with you that the colleges are even on another level as far as what they are putting into adults' heads at that point. But for me, my whole life work is to help people with their life. I'm a coach. I'm a life coach. Okay. I help people with their life. And so when I see that something is damaging, especially to children, then I'm going to speak my truth and I'm going to tell the truth about it. So when I say I don't want to shame parents, I'm not, but I do want them to look closer and closer and closer at the school system, because it is a big deal. For sure.
Yeah, I agree. We're never going to respond well when people are like shaming us, right? Like we have to be inspired to act. We have to see something positive rather than just be told like you're doing it wrong. And I should clarify, when I say that, you know, you can do it within schools, I didn't really mean the government schools. I mean, there are other types of schooling systems and setups and approaches that can be taken that are more flexible, that, you know, honor kids a little bit more. I mean, on the extreme example, you have a school such as the Sudbury School in Massachusetts, which was founded by a bunch of hippies in the 60s. And it's basically formalized unschooling. So the kids are in charge of the school government. They hire and fire teachers. They can learn whatever they want. They do whatever they want all day long. They follow their own interests. And it's been around for decades. It's been replicated across the country. So not every school has to be set up in this kind of command and control prison-like, you know, government school approach. There are all kinds of alternatives. Parents just have to want to explore them. I mean, the first thing that you have to have is a desire, right? You can't change, you can't find a better outcome unless you're willing to do it. If it's a very begrudging thing, if you're just seduced by the free babysitting and you've structured your life in a way where you have to have that and you can't afford private school, you can't afford something else, like obviously you're going to limit your options. But if you're prioritizing your children and their development, their growth, their education, and you can balance that against your interest to go have a job or be out of the house or not watch your kids all day long and homeschool them, there's so many options. I mean, especially since last year, we have pandemic pods now. You know, it's a new name for like an old, you know, approach, but there's just so much opportunity. And if parents just want it, right, they're going to find it. And if you're in some rural area or somewhere where it doesn't exist, you're going to want it. Therefore, you're going to do something about it. You're going to bring a few other families on board that you find in your community and build something yourself. And that's how so many of these families have launched these little micro schools and all kinds of different things, is because they had the desire. They looked around. They didn't find it. They decided to create it. Now they're a blessing to the other families in their lives who are then now attracted to, you know, have this better approach for their kids. I'm very optimistic for the future of education. As bad as COVID has been and all of the government challenges and problems surrounding it, it has been a massive silver lining for education reform, for waking these parents up, for helping them see what's being taught in schools, for seeing them, helping them see how inflexible schools can be. And so homeschooling has like tripled across the country in the past year alone. So, and even families who want to but can't homeschooling, they're finding other options. I just think that cat's out of the bag, and so many more families are waking up to all the alternatives that exist, and that excites me.
I agree 100%. I think we have to start looking at it differently. We have to start looking at it in a whole new way as far as like what school looks like. A lot of my girlfriends have said to me, I can't believe you homeschool. I could never do that. Like, that would just drive me crazy. And I say, it's not about that. And it's actually fun. It's really fun. And it's fun to think about, what do I want them to learn? What do we want to learn together? I have a 10 and 11 year old, also a girl and a boy. And it's like, I give them an assignment. So yesterday she was our teacher, because guess what? She can teach me just as much as I can teach her, right?
Yeah.
And so it puts them into the leadership role, the presentation, like we all stood up and presented. She gave us all assignments to write poems about ourselves. And so, you know, it's fun to me. It helps us get closer to her. I've never felt so close to my children. I've never been so close to them once they became into the school system. And so it's a blessing. It's a gift, and I love it. I actually have a lot of fun with it.
That's awesome.
You're looking at it like, oh my gosh, I have to do what the school system did for 8 hours a day, and I have to do that at home, then that sounds like a freaking nightmare. And that's not
right.
Right.
Totally. Before COVID, I used to present in a lot of homeschool conferences across the country, and I would often stand up and I would say, everyone, I'm here to tell you, you're doing it wrong. And everyone's like, wait, what? And I'd say, homeschooling, like, it's a bad term. We need a bed, like home education or something. Like, homeschooling, the vision of homeschooling, the way to realize its full potential is not to school in the home. You shouldn't recreate what you experienced in the school or using their resources or whatever. And just, oh, now it's in my home, as if you're just recreating a classroom, you know, off campus, but still doing anything that the school does or expects. So many families have done that in the past. I think a lot of that has changed, especially now that a lot of these options have been popularized. A lot of the new curriculum is out there. I think that's less of an issue, but early, you know, on in years past, there's been this weird idea that home, like, I just got to pull my kids out of school, as if like that's like, sure, if they're being bullied or there's just, you know, really bad and social environment there, I can see that, right? But if you're concerned about the school system's like content, you know, and setup and system and stuff, you can't just replicate that in your home and expect any different results. So you do have to. And what I love too about homeschooling is so many of these families are compiling, they're hacking their own education. It's all custom. They're figuring out like a little bit of this, a little bit of that, mix it all together in the witch's, you know, pod and kind of come up with their special brew. But that's great, because then it's individualized to those kids. It better suits their circumstances, and I think there's better outcomes as a result.
Yeah, absolutely. I love it. Okay. So I get your emails and you have powerful messages. You talk a lot about things going on in our world. What is your advice to the masses right now?
I learned this a couple of years ago, that like in forest fires and in times of like natural disasters, you can actually see when those happened historically. When you cut down a tree and you look at the tree rings, right? One for every year type of thing. And in the cases where the rings are very close together versus further apart, that's when the tree didn't have a lot of development. It was kind of conserving its strength. It was trying to weather the storm, whatever that was, versus the times of, you know, growth and so forth, where you have the wider tree rings. I've always thought that was kind of a curious thing. And to me, what it means is, during times of craziness, like with COVID and the government's response to COVID and everything else, I think it's important to conserve and preserve strength, to look inward as families, to make sure that we've got a good thing going on at home. So many of us want to go change the world and fix all the problems and make it all stop. And we can't. I mean, some of us can, some of us should and need to play that role. But my message to families is, look after your own house and make sure that, again, to your delegation issue, right? Don't rely on other people. If anything, we've seen in the past year how the term expert is like meaningless now. and supposed experts have made all these claims and said all these things that are totally wrong and later reversed. Let's make sure that we're taking the responsibility ourselves. Let's make sure that we're not trusting experts. Like, we can still gather input from trusted sources and evaluate it, but we need to evaluate it. We need to not assume it's true. My biggest fear And I guess then my message to parents would be that this will be temporary. I think of the Tea Party that happened, more than a decade ago. Everyone was ticked off and we elected all kinds of new people to Congress, had little Tea Party rallies and groups and everything, and it just fizzled. I mean, the Tea Party basically is non-existent. People went back to normal life. Most of those congressmen who were elected turned out to be as bad as all the other congressmen. And things kind of return to this constant slide of like more government and more problems and everything else. So my biggest fear is that with all the stuff parents have been feeling and thinking about and doing in the past year, that it's going to be temporary, that we're going to reach a point where there's a new normal, the old normal come back, some new balance of life, and we're going to get into our routine. And our kids are going to grow and we're going to go to their soccer games and we're going to move on with life as well. We should, absolutely. But we're going to forget and we're going to grow accustomed to, I mean, like I fly all the time, right? The TSA is just there. It's just part of the process. And yet that's a very new thing when it comes to the flying experience and to being patted down and having people search through your belongings. We get accustomed to these things. And I think that's a problem. I think we shouldn't grow accustomed to the problems and the government responses we're seeing now. I think we shouldn't tolerate all this crazy woke whatever and just assume that's how our culture now is. I think we need to remember. We need to remember what we've been through. We need to remember how we felt about it. We need to continue to talk to our kids, to think ourselves critically, to talk to other people, whatever our sphere of influence is. We got to keep at it because I don't want this to be a, you know, let's all band together and fight and then go back to normal. I want to figure out a way where we can kind of make this a long-term fight that we're engaged in and not just a short-term bit of anger and then we go back to our respective lives.
Yeah, that's so good. I agree with you 100%. I think it is a major turning point. I don't think we're going to go back to that. I think that a lot of people have woken up to things that they can't go back to sleep about, such as the school system and the all of it. You know, I think that people have seen the corruption on such a level that they can't forget it because it's been so in our face and on a whole nother level. And I think that these systems are going to really break down. We're seeing it. We're watching it. We're in the earthquake right now where these systems that have been put in place to really keep us in an ignorant space, a lower state of consciousness, they're breaking down. And I don't think that we can go back. And that's a good thing. That's a good thing for sure. Yeah. All right. Thank you so much. I appreciate your time so much. Is there any last message you want to give to the world?
I mean, I'm on a quest to educate millions of kids with the ideas of a free society. So I would just say to any of your listeners who haven't heard of our books or don't have them yet, we have books from toddlers to teens. They're all at TuttleTwins.com. We're coming out with an animated cartoon series very soon based on all the ideas from our books. That's at TuttleTwins.tv. And just encourage everyone to, you know, here's something you can do, something small, invest in your family, have some amazing conversations together about these ideas and these fun stories. So everything's at TuttleTwins.com.
I love that you are coming out with cartoons. That's so awesome because there's so much conditioning in cartoons and children's shows. This is what I love about you, Connor, is you see a problem and you get to work fixing it with a solution. And that I think is such a beautiful message for people today because so many people are frustrated with things going on in the world, but you see like, okay, here's the problem. What are we going to do about it? So I can't wait for that. When is it?
Yeah, cartoon launch is on October 12th is when the first episode comes out. We have a trailer out now. If you search on YouTube for Tuttle Twins trailer, you'll see it. Or you can go to the Tuttle Twins TV social media channels and see it there. It's a fun little teaser trailer about what we're working on. But October 12th is when the first one launches, and then we'll launch every 2 weeks another episode.
Awesome. I love it so much. They're super easy reads and we read them just in a sit down together. And then we have discussion at the end. There's questions. I love it. It's such a great way to connect with your children and give them really powerful messages. So thank you so much for your time today and for your powerful message. And thank you for everything you're doing in the world.
You're welcome. Thanks for letting me come on your show.
We need more Connors in the world. So
hey, don't tell my wife that.
and her as well. I'm sure she's amazing. So, okay. Thank you so much, Connor.
You're welcome.
Okay, everyone. Thank you for being a part of this conversation. I do want to encourage all of you parents out there. This subject has become so near and dear to my heart because I've opened my eyes to it. So I encourage you to look deeper, ask those questions. Who is it that's teaching my children for 35 hours a week? And I don't mean, do you like their teacher? I mean, what are they learning and who is teaching them? Meaning, who wrote the curriculum? So think about it. Think deeper on this. Don't overwhelm yourself, but start to make those empowering changes to really support your children and build our future to a better place. So thanks for being here today. As always, I am sending you lots of love and support, and bye for now.